welcome to minute 26 of season 12 of Louvre a Minute, the daily podcast where we dig our way through the 1994 Frank Darabont movie, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me for this week is Bubble Wheat from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, and no, we don't have any Amish buggies to talk about today, so you're good with that. If you remember that from all those seasons ago.
Yeah.
I actually talked about that yesterday with a friend of mine who just started listening to the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And he said to me, yeah, the next week I'm doing is with this guy, Bubba Wheat. And I'm like, oh, you're going to love that conversation about the Amish. I said, Bubba refused to come to my show for a few seasons after that one. But yeah. So, yes, it's always nice to reminisce. You know, it works well. All right. So why don't we start off by you telling everybody and me, what is your background with Shawshank?
Well, I did let you know whenever you first recruited me for this season that Shawshank Redemption has been one of those, like, you know, not bucket list, but you know, why haven't I seen this movie before now? It's always been one of those where it's like, yeah, it's near the top of my list of films that I eventually want to get around to watch, but you know, years just keep passing by, and I never, you know, find the reason or the inspiration to actually sit down and you know, find it and watch it. So I was glad that you know, doing a podcast to talk about it finally gave me the excuse to sit down and fully watch this movie. Before this, I mean, like, I was aware of this movie for the longest time, and I did actually watch, you know, about 20 to 30 minutes of the movie, like, many years ago. Like, I was just, you know, at a hospital visiting, and I was, I don't remember if it was in the room or in the waiting room, but this was just playing on TV. And so I did see, like, from, it was about the time with him getting into the library.
Okay.
Up to the time with when he is, like, playing the record.
Interesting. Okay. So you missed some important things, though. you missed some building blocks.
Yeah. So it was nice to, you know, finally, you know, watch it start to finish. And you know, I heard it's a pretty good movie.
And what do you think now that you've seen it?
Yeah, it deserves all the accolades. I mean, it's just enjoyable and fascinating to watch start to finish, and it's built so well. And you know, I did know a lot of the, I don't know if it's right to call them twists. They, you know, I don't feel like they're twists, but like, I kind of knew all the plot reveal, like the big plot reveals, like, you know, where he hid the hammer, the rock hammer, and you know, the salvation is in here. It's like, yes, it is. And you know, the poster hiding the tunnel, and you know, that sort of thing. But so I did, it was nice to kind of see those being foreshadowed early on. And yeah, it's just well built, well acted, well written, just very, very entertaining movie.
Okay. I'm glad that the hype didn't ruin it for you. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. All right. So you've seen this movie 1.2 times, or something like that.
That sounds about right.
Okay. And based on your viewing of it, is it something that you think you will go back to in a few months, few years, whatever it is? I mean, there's no superheroes here. I know. There's that's your forte. unless you want to call someone swimming through a was it two football fields of, as a superhero power, maybe. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those, it's not tough to watch, and especially, it definitely has some tough moments in it here and there, but, I think because of the ending, it is, kind of a feel-good movie with just some hiccups in the middle. It's definitely something that I could see myself watching again, but it's... I'm just not one of those that rewatches movies a lot in general, but nothing would put me off from rewatching this other than, the fact that I'm typically looking for the next new movie to watch rather than, rewatching another
right.
one.
Okay.
But yeah, I could definitely see myself coming back to this if I had a reason
right.
to.
Okay, well, before I misquoted and I said two football fields, there's five football fields. That he crawled through. So that's a little longer. Yeah, but still.
It, which is closer to a quarter a mile than a half mile.
Okay, we'll get there when we get to the to the minute 120 when we talk about that one. But yeah. Hopefully I'll remember to look that up at that time. You know, I still have another hour and a half of this movie to get through before I get to that quote and scene. So we'll just have to wait patiently.
Yeah.
You know, what's another 100 and was it no, what's another 90 minutes? So that, 90 minutes is how many weeks? Only about 18 weeks, until people get there. So, we'll be there about 4.5
months. Yeah.
There you go. 4.5 months. So yeah, that's
a lot quicker than 19 years.
Okay, that's true. That's true. again, anyone who will do one, a podcast on a movie for 19 years is definitely in some sort of prison or hell. There's no question about that. Yeah, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. for me, half a year is more than enough. I don't feel I need to be beyond that.
that reminds me, I should check up on whenever I was doing my Adam Sandler kind of hiatus season. I had someone on that runs a Twitter account called Click Thoughts, and they've been watching the movie Click every week for I think over a year at that point, and they also are collecting as many copies of the Click on DVD as and Blu-ray as possible. And I'm curious if they're still going with
that.
Is that
Robert Black again?
No, it's not Robert Black. I honestly forget his name, but yeah, he just runs the Twitter account, and he's just been watching Click every week for if he's still going, it's probably what three or four
wow.
years at this point.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Okay, so minute 26 begins with Red just saying it like it is, and ends with Andy beginning to describe the 6-7. So we left things off on Friday with Andy starting up a conversation, more or less. He introduced himself, and today begins with Red saying, "Oh, the wife killing banker." And he just looks at him and goes, "So why'd you do it?" Now, one of the things I like about the way that this entire movie plays out is that, you have the internal, I guess, grapevine within Shawshank also. Andy's been there for a little while, whatever it is. But Red is the guy who doesn't only sell, I guess, products or contraband or whatever you want to call it. He also sells information and likes to gather information at the same time. And that's more or less what we have here. I think it's great the way that they they do that. Because basically what he has here is that it's you're the guy who you're the banker who killed your wife. And there isn't really much to answer to that type of comment, because again, he's stating a fact he's a convicted wife killing banker. That doesn't necessarily mean that he did it or didn't do it. I'm assuming based on what you said earlier that when you watched this, for the first time, you already knew that Andy was innocent. Or didn't you?
Actually, I don't. I think I mean, just based on the title, I didn't know for sure that he was innocent. That wasn't something that I remembered as, learning through cultural osmosis, but it was something that I assumed just based on, the title of the movie and, how it started. That's that I imagined that he was an innocent character, and this was about his, his escape from freedom from wrongful imprisonment.
Okay, that does make sense. Now, I mean, this is a question that that I've discussed with numerous guests so far, and I'm sure it's going to come up often throughout this entire season. But who do you think is the main character here? Do you think Red or Andy?
I mean, I think it's I think it's they are dual main characters because it is about, I was kind of browsing through the IMDb trivia, and one thing that I saw which I liked is that it's I forget who it was attributed to, but they believe that it's a like a platonic love story between Red and Andy. And I think that is kind of a perfect way to put it, that, that this is a movie about this this platonic love between these two characters and how it starts and how it builds and how it ends.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I am under the impression, and again, as you know from, the some of the movies that you've done, there are tons of theories about a lot of things, and we'll never really know the truth as to, what is real and what is not. But my theory is that Red is the main character here because he's basically telling the story of this guy Andy Dufresne. So, I mean, that just my personal impression of the whole thing. So basically, at this point, Red then says to Andy, "So why'd you do it?" And Andy just looks at him and in a very sincere voice says to him, "I didn't, since you ask." And again, it's the gee golly type of response from Andy with this whole thing. Andy is someone that is a little naive sometimes with the things that he says and does. And I would say that that's pretty much what's going on here also. He obviously found out that Red is the guy you go to when you need to buy something. But he's still naive about everything that's going on in the prison society, I guess you could say. So for him to respond to Red in this way is an interesting way for him to do it because, like I said, he seems very sincere in his response. Just the idea that automatically he's saying, "Yeah, I didn't do it." That's well because you're asking, so of course I didn't do it. And Red just laughs.
Yeah, it's such an interesting dichotomy because there's this conversation, it's predicated by, Red asks, "Why did you do it?" And that kind of implies that he believes that he's guilty. And then, he's about to say everybody in here is innocent, where it's like everybody will claim that they're innocent, but everybody also believes that everybody else is actually guilty. And it's that interesting dichotomy that's, everybody assumes that everybody else is guilty while everybody will claim that they're all
Exactly.
innocent.
And I like the way that they do that because again they look at the at the audience with a straight eye. They don't at any point try to dupe the viewer into believing that this is a fun movie about all these guys that are innocently wrongfully convicted, that type of thing. The theme is, I mean, this is a real prison. These are real crimes that these people all committed. I mean, the book goes into a little more. I'm assuming you haven't read the book.
No, I haven't read the book, but I did go through IMDb trivia, so I do know that the the book does mention what Red is actually in here for, where the movie doesn't.
Red killed his wife.
Yeah.
Fixed her brakes, and unfortunately she had taken the neighbor and her, and I think a neighbor's kid in the car and killed all three of them in the end. I mean, they even talk about Brooks later on in the book and explain what Brooks did. You know, again, we see this helpless old man type of thing, but you know, in his youth, he committed a heinous crime, I guess you can say. And after Andy responds, "I didn't, since you ask," so Red goes, he just laughs and goes, "You're gonna fit right in." He goes, "Everybody in here is innocent. Didn't you know that?" And you know, he's still playing catch with Haywood, and he goes, "Haywood, what are you in for?" He goes, "Didn't do it. Lawyer f***ed me." And you know, they're just chuckling. Andy is still very serious. He's not laughing at this conversation. And Red goes, "Rumor has it you're a real cold fish. You think your s*** smells sweeter than most. Is that right?" And Andy just looks at him and goes, "Well, what do you think?" He goes, "Tell you the truth, I haven't made up my mind." And he laughs at that also. And Andy, as we will get to know him over the course of this movie, goes, you know, straight to the point. You know, he's not beating around the bush or anything like that. And he goes, "I understand you're a man who knows how to get things." Red then responds to him, "Yeah, I'm known to locate certain things from time to time." And he says, "Well, I wonder if you might be able to get me a rock hammer." He goes, "A what?" So, as I'm sure you anticipated me asking you, what is a rock hammer?
Well, I mean, just based on how it's described in the movie, it's a hammer intended for use for geology, for, you know, breaking up rocks and gemstones.
Okay, that is the general way to describe a rock hammer. It also has other names. It's also known as, yeah, you have any clue as to what other names it would have?
No, not off the top of my head.
Okay, it's a geologist hammer, a rock pick, a geological pick, or a geo pick. And basically, it's a specialized hammer that's used for splitting and breaking rocks. And in field geology, they use it to expose new rock surfaces because you know, weathered surfaces sometimes will obscure the proper analysis of the composition of a particular rock and its history and all that type of stuff. And when people deal with fossils and mineral collecting and stuff like that, they use them to break the rocks around it in order to reveal the specimens that are contained within. And so a rock hammer has two sides to it, one on each end, obviously, and it has a flat square head on one end, and the other end has a chisel or a pick head on it. And the idea of you use it this way is that the corner or the edge of the flat head is used to strike against the rock with the intention of splitting it apart, and you can then trim different samples by using the sharp corners and you know, making them a little smaller. Now, if you have a chisel head, so it's used for clearing loose material and vegetation from exposures, or creating exposures through digging. It's sometimes used to pry open fissures. Some rocks can be easily split, like slate or shale, in order for people to try and reveal some of the fossils. And then you have the other side, which is a pick head, which terminates at a sharp point in order to give the maximum amount of pressure. And it's used for harder rocks. The idea of using it. Now, I'm not 100% sure how this is something that's really going to help Andy, if he's if the whole idea is to you know to chisel out rocks, because like we never see that what surfaces besides the wall that he's chiseling rock out of. You know, it's not, I don't think they have like areas that have you know, big pieces of quartz that he can go over and start chipping away at them or anything like that. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I, And it's tough to say. It also, even though the hammer is small, it almost feels like it's not delicate enough for the chess pieces and figurines
Exactly. That's my point.
that he makes.
Right. I mean, again, we know later on that he has I think they're called rock blankets and stuff like that, which we'll get to when they show up. But that's used to smooth the rocks and stuff like that. So I guess the idea is that when he does find some sort of rock, whether it's big, small, whatever it is, he can use this to make it a little smaller in order to then shine it or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. And Andy goes, "Yeah, a rock hammer." And then Red goes, "Well, what is it and why?" And then Andy says, "Well, why do you care?" And Red's still in the middle of playing this three-way catch, and he just stops right in the mid-throw. And I think the impression that we get is that Red is not used to having this type of conversation. He's used to having a straightforward conversation. Someone comes over and says, "I need this." "Okay, this is your price." And he moves on from there. I don't think he usually has a longer type of conversation like the one he's having right now with Andy. So I like that this is the start of building the friendship between these two men. And then Red responds to him very matter-of-factly and goes, "Well, if it was a toothbrush, I'd just quote a price. But then a toothbrush is a non-lethal object." Now, I would probably disagree with that statement because I think a toothbrush can be used as a lethal object.
Yes, I've definitely. I'm pretty sure I've seen a toothbrush shiv.
Exactly.
A picture of one.
Yeah, there's definitely been movies that deal with that. So it's just maybe in Shawshank Prison in 1947, they didn't have that problem yet. No one thought, "Hey, wait a second, why don't I turn a toothbrush into a more lethal object?" Who knows? So then Andy looks at him and realizes that okay, he's made a very good point with what he's saying. And then he goes, "Fair enough." And he goes, "A rock hammer is about six or seven," and then he gets cut off. So you like me have younger children, and over the last year, few months, there's been this really silly phenomena, of this whole six seven thing. And I just thought it was really funny that he finishes that this minute ends with him saying 6-7. Even though obviously this movie came out 32 years ago. So I don't think
Yeah, and he doesn't have the hand movements
exactly.
that goes along
That's
with
right.
it.
Now, what do you know about 6-7? I learned a lot more than I expected to by looking this up.
Well, I mean the biggest thing about it is like other than the fact that it's just become this phenomenon and is the fact that it means nothing and that like there literally it's not like 69 but it's just something that like started in a song I believe and then it just kind of grew from there and then the whole popularity is it's kind of built upon the fact that it means nothing, and yet the older generation is like desperate to know what does this mean? Why is this popular?
Exactly.
And then like it's just that kind of, it's like that snowball effect where it's like that conflict between the two generations is what keeps it becoming more and more popular.
Yes, that's 100%. And I must say that you referenced 69. I'm very happy that is not the phrase that young kids are now talking about. So, that works too. So yes, it started as a rap song called "Doot Doot 6-7" by the rapper Skrilla. and they ended up making video edits using professional basketball players. Most famously, LaMelo Ball, who he himself is 6 feet 7 inches, which for those outside of the U.S. that's a little more than 2 meters tall. Then they there's someone named Talen T.K. Kinney, who started to repeatedly use the phrase, which it started becoming even more popular because of that. And then in March of 2025, a boy named Maverick Trevilian, he became known as the 6'7 kid after he did a viral video showing him yelling the term at a basketball game while performing an excited hand gesture, which, you know, we now all know what that hand gesture is. Also, the idea basically is that, as you said, it means nothing. It's very ambiguous. Some people say that it's possibly related to the street nearby where Skrilla grew up in Philadelphia. That was 67th Street. There are people who speculate that it's connected to a 1067, which is a code used by the Philadelphia police to notify officers of a death. And so they're saying it could be connected to gun violence. And, you know, the interpretation of the line depicts that the narrator is being innocent while he's, you know, being stopped at a, you know, regular traffic stop. And when people ask Skrilla what it really means, and he says, well, I never thought about it. And I definitely wouldn't want to. You know, I guess he likes the fact that everyone loves the ambiguity of the whole thing, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, I mentioned before about the guy, Talen T.K. Kinney. So he is now known as Mr. 6'7", and he even launched a brand of canned water called 6'7". So again, it's really interesting the way this phenomenon has just done. Now apparently even in May of this year, so Pope Leo the 16th used the hand gesture during a meeting that he had with young Catholic pilgrims. So that's
I also read recently that that Tyson had chicken nuggets that were 6'7", and then another brand, like a more generic brand, they came out with a 6'7" chicken nuggets, and then Tyson was suing them, claiming copyright infringements.
Interesting. Media has branded it, and they're using a lot of it. Like South Park had an entire episode about how the kids have been brainwashed by the 6'7" meme. That aired in the beginning of the season in October 2025. They have Pizza Hut sold chicken wings for 67 cents each on November 6th and 7th. And McDonald's gave away free chicken McNuggets between 6 and 7 p.m. during that time. Domino's offered a one topping pizza with $6.70 if you use the promo code 6'7". Google started having they had an Easter egg on their site that if you typed in 6'7", it would cause the user's screen to shake up and down to mimic the gesture. Wow, that would drive me nuts if something like that happened. You know, if you type something in and the screen starts moving.
That's like the do a barrel roll.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's pretty much about the 6'7" gesture. I mean the idea of the hand gesture is palms up, moving up and down, and it's a way of bonding with others. So yeah, that's a little strange, the whole thing. But oh well. That's the way it is. And that is how this minute ends. So is there anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute?
No, I don't
or
think
about
so.
6-7?
No, I'm good.
I am glad that you are good with that. All right, so we will start with today's daily segment, which is called Main Man Monday, where my guests will give their top five Stephen King adapted novels. So start with your number five and work your way up.
All right. I think, let's see. Well, I'm basing my list on the movies because I haven't read. I take that back. I have read one Stephen King audiobook. I read Salem's Lot, but I'm not a big reader anymore in my adult life. I just stick with the movies.
Okay.
So this list is just based on the movies, and one kind of honorable mention that I will give, which I haven't seen it, and I don't think it's regarded very well, but I remember they actually made a sequel miniseries to Firestarter, starring called Firestarter Rekindled with Marguerite Moreau and Malcolm McDowell as the villain, and I remember kind of enjoying that. I wouldn't say it was great, but I did enjoy watching it. Like they made it for the Sci-Fi Channel, I believe. That was kind of fun. But I will say that my number five, I will go with It. The more recent movie, which I still haven't watched the Tim Curry miniseries.
Oh, that one! I love it.
Another. Yeah, that's another kind of big one that I want to cross off my list. I did watch both versions of Salem's Lot whenever the new one came out, and they didn't quite make my list, but I didn't think it was that bad, and I think the miniseries was the original miniseries was better than the more recent one. And then let's see, for my number four, I will go with The Mist. That's just, it's really well done movie, and that ending though.
Yeah, I just rewatched it last week. I hadn't seen it in years, because so many people keep mentioning it. So I was like, all right, I gotta rewatch it just to refresh my memory on it. I gotta say least favorite of the Darabont movies. The four prominent Darabont movies.
Yeah, I can see that. Like I'm not super big on the monsters, but like that, the villain, like the human villain of that is so well done, and then the ending is just so memorable.
Yes.
That it really sticks with you.
Yeah.
My number three, I will go with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, which I know that that's a looser adaptation, but it's still a fantastic movie. I will say I'll put it at number two, will be Shawshank Redemption. I just watched it once, but it is, it's fantastic. News to nobody who's listening to this. And then my number one is going to be Stand By Me. That's something that I've loved, since I discovered it probably as a teenager somewhere in there. It's just such a fantastic movie. I love that movie from start to finish.
Yeah, Mike, I completely agree with you that it is a great adaptation. One of the reasons that I always think Stand By Me is such a great adaptation is because they don't change very much. It's almost word for word, everything that happened in the book. There's a few minor things here and there. Like there's the extra story that's told and stuff like that. Have you ever read the book?
No, I haven't. like I said, I've only read one Stephen King story, and that's the Salem's Lot audiobook.
Got it. Okay, makes sense. All right. So now we will play the first of two daily games. We will first play Name that novel adaptation. So the idea here is very simple. Like Shawshank Redemption, which was originally called Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, we have I found a list of books that were turned into movies where the title is different between the two. So I will spin a wheel and you will randomly get a title of a book, and you have to try and get. I'll tell you what year it came out, the movie came out, and you have to try and guess what movie. And I can give you hints if you want along the way.
Okay.
So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, this is a movie that the original novel was, or the original book was called A Town, a Team, and a Dream. And it came out in 2004.
2004 was that? Oh, I'm pretty sure. Well, I mean, with a team, that's definitely a
Yes,
sports
it is.
movie. I'm trying
It
to.
was also,
It
you want a hint
definitely.
or not yet?
Sure,
Okay,
I'll take a
it was made
hint.
into a TV show also. That ran for many
Was
seasons.
that Friday night? Friday Night
Yes, very
Lights?
good. Very good. Nicely done. I mean, obviously the title Friday Night Lights is a little more succinct.
Yeah.
Going to see a movie or watching a TV show with that long of a name, I don't know. Oh well. And now the second game that we would play is called High Low. So the idea here basically is I've compilated a list of every Oscar Best Picture nominee since 1950, and you have to basically guess what its IMDb rating is and what its Rotten Tomato rating is, and to use as a benchmark. We have Shawshank, which is a 9.3 IMDb rating and a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay, so you'll have three of these every day. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
Okay.
Okay. 1997's movie Titanic. Where do you think it is on the scale of IMDb ratings and Rotten Tomatoes?
All right, so IMDb, I'm going to go with 8.7. And Rotten Tomatoes, my guess is 90.
Okay, so you're closer on the Rotten Tomatoes because it's an 88%, and the IMDb percentage is 7.9, which I agree with you that it's a little low. I'm a big fan of Titanic, and I would have expected it to be a little higher. But oh well. All right, let's spin the wheel for the next one. Okay, the 1999 film The Cider House Rules.
Okay. Feel like that
Have you
one's
ever seen that one?
no, I haven't seen it. I feel like that one's kind of one of the ones that's somewhat faded, like not fully into obscurity, but I don't feel like that's one that gets brought up in conversations that often anymore.
Not unless you're talking about abortion.
Yeah. I will go IMDb. I'll say I think it'll be kind of high because I feel like that's a movie where I feel like the people that are rating it are the people that are seeking it out. So I'll say 8.5, and Rotten Tomatoes, I'll go 86.
You overshot that one by a lot on both of those. It's 7.4 on IMDb and 71% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
So, all right, and that's been the wheel for the final time today. Twenty 13 film, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay, I actually have seen this one. I will say, I know this is one of those where it gets people like it. A lot of people like it for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
I will say IMDb 8.9 and Rotten Tomatoes. I'll go. I guess I'll go 89. I don't. I'm not very good. I feel like I'm not very good at this game because I a lot of these it's just kind of shot in the dark for me.
Yeah, it's for sure. We're just doing it for the fun of it anyway. So, you overshot on both of them. The IMDb rating is 8.2, which I think is actually higher than I thought it would be. And Rotten Tomatoes is 80%.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for playing. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find Bubbleweed?
Sure, I got a lot of stuff going on, so I'll stick keep it to one thing a day here. And for today, I will talk about my actually written blog is Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights, which I have been writing on superhero and comic book movies since 2012, and I've recently got back into it this year. I am nearing, I'm very close to 600 reviews on there, which I mean, I know compared to your site is, pocket
No,
change, but yeah, I've been doing that. It's a lot of fun for me. I definitely think I hit a spot of personal superhero fatigue where I took a few years off, but I am happy to be back into it, and I am enjoying diving back into mainly this year it's been catching up on the Marvel and DC movies with a handful of much more obscure movies like Catman Lethal Track, which is a extremely low budget movie where half of it is kind of a superhero movie and half of it is absolutely unrelated to anything. It's an awful movie, but I had a lot of fun watching it and writing about it.
okay, cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.